thank you for joining us on The Skeptic Sidekick, where we delve into ancient societies, ghosts, the paranormal, UFOs, all looking at it from the perspective of the true believer and from the skeptic perspective. Joining me, my partner, my co-host, my sibling, Kimber Rodriguez. Myself, I am Richard Gregg. And again, let's look into being the skeptic psychic.
Hello. And welcome once again to the Skeptic Psychic. Tonight's a very special topic, trigger warning. We will be discussing a very, very famous Catholic priest, which will have overtones of Catholicism. So with me tonight is such a wonderful host, guest, greatest thing in the whole world. Third only to my wife and my mother, Kimber Rodriguez.
Hey, how are you this week?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
Doing good. As you mentioned, there is a lot of religious overtone in this tonight's episode as a trigger warning. We are not endorsing it. It's just part of the history of the story. So, you know, listen. If you like, if you want to skip this one, you know, we totally get it. But anything exciting happened with you this past week?
Not this past week, but next, this upcoming week, September 24th until April the 2nd, is a very exciting week for me.
You mean March 24th?
Yeah, March 24th to April 2nd.
What's happening during that week?
That is the week in Christianity, which I personally believe in which the final days of Jesus happens. Palm Sunday starts tomorrow, and then that whole week leads up to Good Friday.
Oh, so you're talking about Holy Week.
Well, not to me. I don't believe, I don't call it Holy Week. I just call it my favorite holiday.
Interesting. Well, I did, while I was waiting for you this evening, I came across an interesting article that I, you know, this is something in nature that's natural, but it's still kind of strange and out there and rarely seen. So I thought it would fit since we are, you know, the skeptic psychic. The article is from KWTX, which is out of Waco, Texas. And as you know, Waco, that's where our daddy was born.
Well, Steve Martin and Dr. Pepper.
Yes. But anyway, this article is actually...
And maybe about, Uncle Dusty, I'm not too sure.
Yeah, I think he was born in Waco too, I think. But yeah, this article, even though it was written by a local news station in Waco, it actually takes place on Mustang Island, which is off the coast of Corpus Christi.
Corpus Christi, yep.
And what this article talks about is a strange spaghetti monster that spotted washing up on shore.
No, not the strange spaghetti monster.
Yes.
What as are those people going to do?
Now, as opposed to what we know as the religion of the spaghetti monster, where they wear the strainers on their head, this is an actual sea creature that is similar to the Portuguese man of war. And it's actually a colony of animals that live together as one. And each, I'm sorry, lost my train of thought. I was still thinking of the strainers on their heads.
Yes, the great spaghetti monster. They have to wear their special strainers.
Yes. But this one, it is very similar to a jellyfish, as it does have tentacles that can sting. So if you are on the beach right now, as it is spring break, and you happen to see this creature, just go ahead and admire it from the distance. Don't get up close. But I will
from
post
the distance.
I will.
You might not get stung.
I will post.
I'm sorry, am I ruining it for you?
No, you're fine. But okay. I will post that on our website, since it is something that is strange and obscure, even if it is a true animal. And yeah, it is spring break right now, so I'm avoiding South Padre Island with, at all costs because it is one of the top 10 spring break destinations in the country. It has been swarmed by not aliens, not strange, well, sort of strange creatures, but college kids. So, yeah, don't want to get into the one of those encounters right now.
No.
You might not be able to find our way back.
No, now find the way back. But anyway,
Let's get into
tonight's
tonight's
topic.
topic.
Yes. Now, for those of you who say, "Oh my gosh, it's St. Patrick's Day." St. Patrick was the one who drove out the snakes in Ireland. Guess what? That's only a myth and a legend. Tonight, we're going to tell you who exactly, what exactly, and how exactly St. Patrick saved the isle known as Ireland.
Yes. Would you like to start us off, oh great brother?
Oh, sure. I'm the great brother now.
You're always the great brother.
Alrighty. So, going into the St. Patrick is celebrated for a good half of the planet. Obviously in Ireland, but also in the United States, Australia, Canada, Russia, Singapore, Japan, Argentina, Croatia, India, Malaysia, Maseret, Norway, Spain, South Korea, Switzerland, Turkey, and the United Arab Emirates, and the UK. Let us also not forget St. Patrick's Day is also celebrated differently, but also in Mexico. Now, to think about it, what do you really know about the holiday? For one Irish, it's a national holiday, and what with a true meaning of purpose. So why is the rest of the world uses this as an excuse to wear green and eat corned beef and cabbage, which also down large amounts of green beer. Would water set a small Caribbean island only 16 meters long and 11 meters wide consider this an important holiday as well? Well, let's start off with the ancient homeland of Ireland and the arrival of one set scared British teenager, most likely named Methlin Suchet. Suchet? Yeah. Or
Maywin suck
Suchet.
it.
Maewyn Suchet. He was born at the end of the Roman era, which they ruled over the Britannia in the year of 387 AD. Some scholars suggest he lived in the Birdswald, some 20 miles from Hadrian's Wall in northern England. Though he was most likely born in Scotland or Wales, his father was a deacon in the Catholic Church, and his grandparent was a priest. Though Maedwin had no affinity one way or the other towards God at that time. The family was well off enough, and he was lived in a comfortable life.
Now, what is known about Patrick comes from the writing called Confesso. This
Confessio.
is Confessio. Thank you. Confessio.
Si,
And
si.
this was probably more than likely written by Patrick himself. He doesn't give any other name other than Patrick. So there is no indication as to why he chose that particular name. Only reason that we can the only reason we can suspect his name was Maywin is because he does mention the names of occupations of both his father and grandfather in Britain, giving historians a chance to track him down through his lineage. Now, according to Patrick's Confessio, when he was about 16, he was in a raiding party. And this was a party of Irish pirates that had kidnapped him and sold him as a slave in Ireland. His purchase was by a chieftain named Milieu of Atrim, and he put Maywin to work herding sheep and pigs, a smelly and thankless job that kept him out of the elements. As such, the boy had little interactions with anyone, and no one bothered him much. And to replace his tattered clothing, no one bothered to replace his tattered clothing. So in the winters, he had to work to keep from freezing as his original garments slowly turned to rags.
He went from riches to rags.
Now, during this period of his life is when he became a firm believer in God. Having no one else to talk to, Maywin would later write about this period in his life.
And these are the words from Maywin. At the time, I did not know that the true God. I was taken into captivity in Ireland. Along with thousands of others, we deserved this because we had gone away from God and did not keep his commandments. We would not listen to our priests, who advised us that how we sound could be saved. The Lord brought on the strong anger upon us and scattered us among many different nations, even to the ends of the earth. It was among the foreigners that was seen how little I was. It was only after 6 years in slavery that God revealed to Maywin at a vision that it was time to flee from slavery, and he would walk to the coast, not the coral, but the coast.
Well, there is coral at a coast, so.
Yes, but some 180 to 200 miles away, and that a ship would be waiting for him there that would take him home again.
Home again, jiggity jig.
Jig-jig. Trusting in God, Maywin walked to the coast, traveling through unfamiliar wilderness and foraging as he went. Once he reached the shore, he did indeed find a British ship anchored there that he was able to board and go home. He hadn't been home in a long and probably still recovering from the years of his abuse when God sent him to another vision, according to his confessional. Kim?
I saw a man coming, as it were, from Ireland. His name was Victorious, and he carried many letters. And he gave me one of them. I read the heading, "The Voice of the Irish." As I began the letter, I imagined in that moment that I heard the voice of those very people who were near the wood of Falkirk, which is beside the Western Sea, and they cried out as one voice, "We appeal to you, holy servant boy, to come walk among us." Now, about this time, Maywin would have been about 22 to 23. But he didn't think of himself, but only of the people imploring him to come and help. Maywin traveled to Gaul and studied for 25 years. Eventually, he was ordained by St. Germanus, who was Bishop of Auxerre. Bishop was well aware of Maywin's vision, and he gave his blessing for the young man to leave Britain's shores and bring gospel to the Irish. According to the records, Maywin would have been going by the name of Patrick from this point on. And that kind of does make sense, because I know, like, in the Catholic religion, when people are ordained, whether it be, you know, to priesthood or, you know, to become a nun, they always take on another name. So it would make sense.
Sometimes priests kind of like, oh, that's Father Malik or Father O'Hurley, you know. Usually when they can become up at the bishops, they become, oh, Holy Father, Phileas of the Sacred Wounds.
But that would make sense why he stopped going by Maywin and started going by Patrick when he was ordained by the church. He did reach the Irish shores of Slane on March 25th, in 433 AD. And by now he would have been 48 years old.
Interesting to note, by the time this would probably be in the future, it'll probably be about May 24th, May 25th. So it's a pretty interesting thing.
Yes. You mean March, not May.
March 25th.
Yes, you are getting your days mixed up.
No, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Year to be over with, obviously.
Exactly. Now, at the beginning, the local pagans did not like what Patrick had to say, and there are accounts of him being imprisoned numerous times and attempts were made on his life. But as Patrick began carrying a dagger, this is hardly surprising, but more on that in a minute. What was on Patrick's side was that because of his time he spent in Ireland as a slave, he had an understanding of what their native language, culture, and religion. He built alliances with the local leaders and merged the Irish lore with Christianity. Basically, he kind of cheated. He moved the Christian celebratory days to one that corresponds with those Irish who used to celebrating. He used local shamrocks or three-leaf clovers and shared them representing the Holy Trinity. The number three was already significant to the pagan tree, so it was easier to step in and include the three most deities of sorts to their belief systems, which had already included the triple deities. The now popular Celtic cross, or Celtic cross, with the three arms and a base, joined by the circle of a mashup of the Christian cross and the Irish Triskelion, or triple spiral. In the annals of the Kingdom of Ireland, it is stated that nothing could be clearer than that Patrick emerged Christianity on the pagan superstitions with so much skill. He nearly won the people over in Christian religion before they understood the exact difference between the two systems of belief.
Now, the first Christian church in Ireland was thanks to Patrick. However, he was not the first Catholic to try to reach Irish shores. A nobleman named Palladius from Gaul was actually the first known bishop to tread the Irish shores. He was a married man with a young wife and young daughter when he decided to dedicate himself to the church. According to history, he kissed them all in a manner of the apostles, which we're taking to mean and weeping openly, before he left for Sicily to study. Apparently, his last act before leaving was give his own daughter away to a convent.
To a convent woman.
Yes. Now, it wasn't clear, it wasn't known whether she or her mother approved to joining this convent, but maybe their feelings are recorded on some long decaying and forgotten parchment or scroll deep in within the Roman vaults, or maybe they were never even recorded. I mean, at that time, women didn't have many rights. So if he had said, my daughter's going to a convent, really there couldn't be much argument behind that. But I digress. Palladius.
Quoting Shakespeare, get thee to a nunnery, woman.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Woman, get thee to a nunnery.
Either way.
Palladius. And just a little bonus question there. Who could tell me where that's from?
I want to say Taming of the Shrew.
No.
Where is it from?
Hamlet.
Ah, okay. Now, back to our story. Palladius, upon becoming a full priest and commanded off to Ireland, he refused to work with the people and refused to accept their ways. Maybe if he had tried to act like he even wanted to be there, maybe if he gave less arrogant off, sorry, my tongue tonight's not wanting to work. Perhaps if he tried acting like he even wanted to be there, maybe if he gave less arrogant lectures, maybe if he didn't damn the way the Irish were living for centuries, maybe Palladius would have had a chance to be successful in Ireland. The king of Leinster in the Eastern Province banished him, and his son, Prince Nothy, made sure that Palladius got on the boat to North Britain. He ended up working to establish parishes among the already faithful up in Scotland. Now, Scottish tradition holds that Palladius eventually pulled together a Christian community that he settled in and would preside over for nearly 20 years. But that's in Scotland. Let's go back to Ireland.
Now, Palladius had four companions who had accompanied him to Ireland, and none of them were upset at the masses, and they were allowed to stay if they wished. Brother Sylvester, Solinius, remained in Ireland, but Augustus and Benedictus followed Palladius until his death sometime around the year 450 AD. After that, they both returned to wherever it was they came from and aren't really important to the story anymore. Now, Sylvester and Solinius did not appear to do well, that their history seemed to be at an end with Palladius, leaving them to run a church Palladian had established in Donat Shararia, which translates to the Church of the High Field. Church of the High Field. Okay. The local record recorded 300 years later states that the monastic foundation was built where a ruined medieval church once stood. Ironically, they named it St. Sylvester. However, the church was named it after the Pope Sylvester the First, not this lonely priest. Sure. So it's no wonder the Irish want to do harm to Patrick when he first came to the scene. 2 years earlier, they had an exodus Palladius, whom would not have been around 30 at that time. And 2 years later, here comes the new guy, only older, namely Patrick, who would have been in his late 40s, wanting to push that God agenda again.
So much for the younger guy. It turns out that the old man would be the only one to truly set a flame of Christianity alight. Within a couple of decades, the entire nation was converted to Christianity. Now that is a major achievement. So with the name St. Patrick, you'd think the Catholic Church was the one who granted him his sainthood, right? Nope. This is just one of the many things that you might not know about the man. Patrick has never actually been sainted by the Catholic Church. It's only in name, and the Irish themselves have proclaimed him one. Now, why didn't the church do it? Well, for starters, they hadn't even established a formal process for sainthood during his life. And that's the stuff he's legend for. Really, you can't call it anything miraculous. You know, again, this isn't our opinion. He did work tirelessly and converted thousands to an established churches and monasteries all across the country. But as far as the Catholic Church is concerned, you need to have two miracles to be granted canonization. Now, there are so many tales about Patrick that sound miraculous. After all, didn't he stomp on the snakes of Ireland? It's true that Ireland has no native snakes. Any snake you may possibly come across was either imported in and is kept in a zoo or as a pet. Or it was a pet that got loose or was released into the wild.
But with the lack of snakes really isn't anything miraculous, but rather a regional explanation. Ireland like the other isles of the northern seas, once were all part of the same landmass. What now is Ireland's shores was once merely lowlands. In fact, Ireland became an island long before Britain, which is closer to the Eurasian mainland. As Britain was still landlocked, many reptiles, including snakes, were able to migrate due to the warming climates. Ireland was already an island continent by the time the snakes reached their coast. So, why the stories about St. Patrick stomping all the snakes of Ireland? It doesn't make much for a grand tale. Share over a pint, nearly a roaming fire at night. But he is actually an allegory. See, the Irish have a long history of being invaded and decimated, invaded and decimated, invaded and decimated. In fact, a lot of the Irish history is only known for about because an anonymous author in the 11th century compiled a document that he somehow helpfully named the Book of the Invasion, though it's always been referenced to as the Book of Taking of Ireland, depending on those who translate to refer to. The information it contained across the about the Celts, their myths and poems, tinkering with the history of the back of the Old Testament, which still was used over a century later. Now, interesting to note, Ireland was the name given, I believe, to one of the conquerors, the Celts, called their land Celt. But they spelled it the same way. Each time they were conquered, the inhabitants were either killed or allowed to flee, which is where a lot of the Irish myth lore comes from. The Fir Bor and the Tuatha De Dathan were said to have gone underground, giving birth to many of the Fae. The Melethians from Spain are said to be the ancestors of modern-day Irish. Funny enough, the Melethians, if you go back into their history, were involved in building the Tower of Babel when they lived under Scythian rule far from Spain. The king, Phanes Farisiad, had a son who married the daughter of an Egyptian pharaoh. Their son, Gaedhild, is also known as the original ancestor of the Gaelic people.
When Gaedhild was a child, he was bitten by a poisonous snake and was rushed to Moses for healing. Moses then prophesied that Gaedhild's descendants would one day follow the setting sun and find land where no snakes could be found. After the pharaoh drowned in the Red Sea, Gaedhild and his family returned to Scythia, where his descendants decided to search for this promised land and arrived in Spain. Once they got there, they realized that Spain was not the promised land, but there was nowhere else for them to go at the time. Sorry, I lost where we were at. Let me go back.
You okay?
Yeah, I just had lost my place. I'm trying to get back to it. Now, Brogan, who was leading the search instead, built a town, and it was called Brigantia. He raised a large tower on the cliffs above the sea. Now, the story goes on to say that Brogan's son, Ith, climbed the tower on a clear day and spotted Ireland in the distance. Becoming entranced by it, he set sail with a crew of men to see the land for himself. The Tuatha De Danann mortally wounded it. Tuatha De Danann.
Tuatha De Danann, according to Shauna.
The Tuatha De Danann mortally wounded Ith, and his men carried him to their ship to set sail for home. It was his kinsmen who led the expedition to Ireland seeking revenge. It took a long time for the revenge to take place, as the men had trouble finding this place in the first place. That's too many places. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the myth says that this is due to Tuatha using magic. Because the Milesians couldn't fathom any other explanation, they had made their island invisible. By the time they landed, they claimed the land for themselves, though the Tuathans insisted it couldn't be a conquest, as they had no armies of their own. They claimed the rules of war, therefore, and they claimed the rules of war did not count. However, the Milesians were willing to set sail and find the island again, and then the Tuathan would accept their rule.
Of course, the Tuathans' magic came into play again, as the Milesians had it set sail when a hurricane bared them down their boats, scattering them and sinking many. But eventually, the remaining Milesians, despite being separated from one another, managed to land their ships along the different parts of the island. People began slaying the Tuathans' rulers over the scattered rest of the underground. The rest of them scattered underground. The kinsmen, three brothers named Ibar, Finn, and Emeron, then divided the island between them. The Celts were descendants of the Milesians, as it was from the tales that the Milesians told their children and passed on to their children and to their children and so forth and on and on and on, creating with a rich tapestry that is the Irish mythos. But where does that leave St. Patrick? Well, those snakes that said there would be the allegory from actual St. Patrick routing out the old superstitions and bringing Ireland to the Catholics doesn't sound like as a poet as they say. Some priest walking around prophesizing about God is okay, and all the images from a man walking out into a pit of snakes, lifting the hill or lifting his priestly robes high to keep off them clean, and then stomping and smashing of those critters from the earth with his own 2 feet is something that can be either humorous or even brave. If any one of the storytellers give the snakes poisonous fangs or makes them into an to the size of an Amazonian python.
So, sorry again, but there were no snake stompings performed on the Irish soil. No scaly mass murderer historical sites exist. But it would be a tourist destination if there was one. It was the British who actually gave the island its name, basing it off the Gaelic language. The name they had for themselves was Erin, as in Erin go bragh, which roughly translates today as Ireland forever. The Irish, perpetually conquered, couldn't even keep a name for themselves. The Irish didn't observe St. Patrick's Day until the 10th century, which was long after Patrick's body had turned to dust. There were no parades or revelry that the holiday is now known for. It was actually the Americans who took the Irish holiday and supersized it, as we do everything else here in America. There was no one in Ireland dyeing rivers green or drinking green beer. The whole, if you're not wearing green, you'll get pinched, is also 100% American, because we do love finding ways to torture each other here in America. In fact, St. Patrick's color wasn't even green, but he wore blue. As such, when King Henry VIII declared himself the King of Ireland in 1541, he made up of coat of arms in solid blue with a golden harp. This can still be found in use on the Irish presidential flag. The color green didn't stick until the 18th century, when the shamrock became seen as a symbol of rebellion for the identity of the Irish. The Great Irish Rebellion of 1641 was shown as a revolt against the English crown, so they waved green flags with a golden harp as a sign of their defiance of the English rule. They trotted green out again during the Irish Rebellion of 1798 as they sang The Wearing of Green, an Irish street ballad lamenting to their own people to come out and support the rebellion by wearing something green. Since that time, Ireland and the color green have been linked irrevocably.
Now, the association of leprechauns can firmly be laid at Walt Disney. See, Walt Disney was well-received in the 1959 classic movie, Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
I love that movie. It's such a good one. A young Sean Connery.
Yes.
Trying to sing.
And the mythos of spending St. Patrick's Day downing massive amounts of beer as St. Patrick was preaching for the Catholics. Why wouldn't they be drinking beer in the middle of a Lent? Don't miss Catholics give up beer for Lent? Well, celebrating St. Patrick was seen as a break from whatever you were trying to do. Fasting or whatever. Though the nations and downs a lot of pints for the holiday, the Irish appear to enjoy whiskey more than ale, as most aren't down with the pub anyway, as if St. Patrick's Day is seen as days to spend with family. It is a day of prayer and reflection. But then, of course, for we Americans, again, are Americanized Irish immigrants who had turned it into a wild party seen to become here. There are really aren't Irish eating corned beef and cabbage, bangers and mash for the holiday either. As it was a family gathering, a pork roast was usually carved out in the meat of the day.
Sorry, my computer's acting up. Now, is there anything we know that is to be true about this holiday? Well, we know the use of the shamrock in Patrick's teachings is true. And when you come across stainless glass works or illustrations of him, there is usually a shamrock held in his hand. It's not 100% proven, as records of Patrick's death have been found to have been written much later. But March 17th is agreed by all to be the day of his death, even if the year is in question. One such document claims that Patrick died at the age of 120, but most scholars believe he was far much younger than that. That does make sense, as exact date and year of his birth is also debated by scholars. So, you know, why wouldn't it be that his death is argued as well? Now, we do know that Patrick existed and that he died in the Irish town of Down in Downpatrick, Northern Ireland. And there is a large boulder that covers the place where his body is supposed to rest. And this is on top of a local hill. However, the boulder is a newer stone that was placed in the early 1900s. As too many pilgrims that visited the site were removing soil from this holy site to carry as relics. The stone is simply carved with a Celtic cross and the name Patrick. There is an older Celtic cross at the site that dates back to the 10th century. Memorial plaques citing who Patrick was and his importance to the Irish people can be seen at a nearby cathedral that was dedicated to the saint, and it was erected in the 12th century. This cathedral still stands today. At the bottom of the hill, you can find the St. Patrick Center. This is the only permanent exhibit in the world dedicated to its most faithful saint. The Herald Apostle of Ireland is still prevailed today for the Irish Catholics wherever you find them. The holiday, again in Ireland, is a day of remembrance and pilgrimages. Pilgrimages are still made.
So there are no leprechauns in the story, no monstrous snakes seeking out the righteous to devour. Ireland's great today is the beauty and the coming of springtime. As we all fairly certain that no one is tipping a hat to one another saying, top of the morning to ya. And if you're really implying here the shout of greeting to the Irishman you meet, remember that it's St. Paddy's Day, spelled with a double D, and not decided from merely Patty, P-A-T-T-Y. It is made for him to correct you, so that way the Ireland, instead of fine, and do it for Ireland instead. And remember, no matter how attractive the Irish lad or lass may be, no one is wearing Kiss Me on Irish buttons, so the tip's off unless you're invited. But how do we come, how does it come off to you? Too much religion in tone, or do we manage to keep you interested? Give us a shout out, a comment, likes, comment, 5 stars. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco, seis. And tell us what you think about this.
Yes. If you're interested in continuing this topic, we can discuss it in our Facebook group, Skeptic Psychic. We invite you there to join us.
Mm-hmm.
It is a safe place where you can discuss whether you believe in the paranormal or whether you don't believe in paranormal, as long as you keep it friendly. And as you mentioned, if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, we do ask for 5 stars.
Hi, we also, sir.
Yes, 5 stars.
Hi, we also, sir.
Please review us also.
5 stars.
Please review us also, as we do read reviews on air, and we really truly need some. One more thing before we let you go this week. If you do find this information interesting, share it with a friend. The best advertisement is word of mouth. And have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your week. And our next episode will get a little more spooky again. So look forward to that. And sweet dreams, everybody.
And unpleasant nightmares.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.